Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Retreat.
Look to Treble's going. She's gone.
This is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. It's P&Q here, Philippa Hall in my very Time of Jesus 70s dress.
And Quentin Rayner, because she can't resist a man in a loincloth.
And after having had a word with Her Majesty, we've relented and let you rabble of Dumpty Dummers back as extras, you little tinkers. This week's Dumpty Dum is from our Stephen, and we're lucky enough to hear thoughts from Caroline, Meg, Wendy and Alan, Sarah, Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, Richard, Bill, Rosie, Rob, Stephen, Brian, Sarah, Vasana, Amelia and Anon of Ambridge, plus Tweet of the Week, plus the Facebook roundup, predictions for next week, and another Dumpty Book Dum. Marvellous. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Our cup overfloweth.
It absolutely does.
Do you actually think people listen to this podcast? Staggering. Thank you very much.
It's such an honour, it really is. But Quentin, what have you been up to since we were around at Traces for Pizza?
Well, good listeners, I'll let you into a little secret. Philippa ticked me off during the week, said you've got to make your highlights of the week shorter. It's far too long.
So is that it?
Pretty much. I was going to say, you'd be delighted to know, Philippa, I've had a fairly unremarkable week. Short of saying that, so we have two of our daughters back. We're just waiting for our son back. So two of the three are back. Christmas tree is ready to be put up, and I have lit, so to speak, or switched on our Christmas lights. They have been the highlights, really. So there you go, nice and short. You must be delighted.
I am thrilled with that. Well done, Quentin. Yes, well, I've been busy wrapping presents this week. It's fair to say I am an over-seller taper, so I don't like the paper to come away before the present is opened and reveal what's inside. So I use about 3 metres of sellotape per present, I think, to make sure. Mm. So everyone has to get out the scissors to get into presents that I wrap. But
you got a very important package from me this week, didn't you?
I did, but I'm not allowed to open it until next week. So that's very exciting.
I got this message saying, can I open my envelope? I said, no, you can't.
Well, I didn't know if there was something wrapped inside it. I was just very excited.
You have to wait.
Oh, there is something else that we did this week, though.
That was a low light, wasn't it?
That video is now live. So if you join us, if you go to patreon.com, type in Dum Dee Dum, there is a video there of Quentin and I doing our Christmas special for our lovely patrons, which includes the tasting of pickled eggs. And we won't reveal any more than that, but...
you can decide, listeners, which of us is braver when it comes to the egg.
No comment. No, it's one I won't forget, that video, Quentin, I have to say.
No, it's one that keeps repeating itself, yeah.
Very good, very good. Well, right, Quentin, mm-hmm. It's been a week since we last turned down chocolate mousse at lunch. What else has been served up in Ambridge?
Well, in the week after the good people in your neck of the woods, Philippa, the good people of North Shropshire rose up and rebelled. Rebellion also ran amok in Borsetshire. Mia may have disrupted the shoot, but it was Linda who got both barrels.
This is unbelievable! It's a disgrace! Tracy protested at Linda's decision to sack the extra extras, which Kirsty had refused to do. What do you think the Queen would say? I've got a good mind to write to her.
The royal rebuke worked. Linda bid a hasty retreat to the Bull, where she bumped into new drinking pals Ruth and Stella. One tactless remark about Brookfield's quagmired cows had Ruth spitting out her shandy.
In a rage worthy of Herod, Ruth told Linda to find another barn for her palace, that she was toast as the heavenly host, and that she was a damn good farmer who knows how to look after her cows.
It took 4 days, but Natasha finally told Tom she was expecting by effectively stabbing him in the eye with a pregnancy test. He then chomped through most of Pat and Tony's 47th wedding anniversary lunch, pummeled his parents into agreeing to let them move back to Bridge Farm, and blurted out their news.
That's fantastic!
Meg Ryan gasped. Or was it Pat?
As he manically started packing, Tony asked Tom why he was behaving like a lunatic. Tom confessed to feeling terrified about losing another baby, as he had with Kirsty, along with guilt that his older brother John never got to meet his own son.
We bade farewell to Blake. Full of Tracy's pizza, transformed by Chelsea's haircut, he got into a cab paid for by St. Jim to set off to a new place to live and the prospect of a training course. He deserves the happiness Jim wished for him.
If Tom was behaving like a Montbelliard in a china shop, Mia was wielding a sledgehammer on the matchmaking front. Why don't you join the cider club? Have you got any kids? What's your favourite movie? Were just some of the stellar moves the teenager made to get Will a girlfriend. But her stepdad told her the idea was alien to him at the moment.
But maybe Stella's on the lookout for a girlfriend. After 33 years, Ruth still doesn't understand David's filing system, but we don't understand how she and Stella have become best buddies so quickly. Citing the flimsiest of excuses, Stella flogged all the way over to Brookfield to discuss being an extra. Or is it extracurricular she's really after?
Harrison seems to have been on a self-awareness course since Blake.
I'm a copper, and I didn't see anything, and I should have.
While Mia made a bid for Tweet of the Week with her placard, tweeting for the birds who can't tweet for themselves.
I think we all just need a bit of calm and to settle down with Tony and Tom to watch an episode of Parks and Procreation. And there you have it, folks. Can we go now?
Very good. I think we should. No, we've got all these wonderful calls. So yes, we need to find out what our fabulous Dumpty Dummers made of it all.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And first of all, we have Caroline, who is a first-time caller in Aurora and is worried about Kirsty.
Hi. I'm a first-time caller in Aurora, so I'm feeling quite nervous, so bear with me. My name's Caroline. I'm calling from Wellington, New Zealand. First started listening to The Archers many years ago because my mum always listened to it, but only really got back into it regularly, as probably a lot of other people did, with the Helen and Rob storyline. Sorry, that's the dog coughing in the background. I do remember very, very ancient characters like Marjorie Antrobus and Nelson Gabriel, but that's about it, really. So I'm not sure what vintage I am. I'm calling in. I've been compelled to call in because of the Natasha pregnancy storyline. I think I'm most concerned about Kirsty in all of this. I mean, miscarriage is a terrible thing in any way, shape or form. But I suppose with Kirsty, she may be one of those who gets to hear and see the heartbeat but doesn't get a living child at the end of it. So I feel for her in that capacity and hope that she's okay. She has been quite annoying though recently, so you know, swings and roundabouts. But yes, my main concern in this story is for her, and it's made me feel quite protective of her in a bizarre sort of way, even though obviously she's a fictional character. Anyway, I don't know if I'll ring in again because I'm not sure I have many pearls of wisdom to impart, but I think your podcast is blooming brilliant, and thank you very much for putting it on. It gives me lots of entertainment and listening pleasure. I'm not drunk. Bye.
Oh, bye, Caroline. We're drunk on your praise. Thank you very much indeed. We're delighted that you enjoy the podcast so much, we think you're blooming brilliant as well for calling in along with your coughing dog. So please do call in again, because we'd love to hear from you, and we do love first time callers, don't we? You're in good company, because Roy feels vintage is Marjorie Antrobus, but I'll leave that one hanging. Okay. Right. Your main concern is, as you said, is the effect of Natasha's pregnancy on Kirsty. And in fact, that's a concern that I noticed on social media generally people had. It was mentioned on our Facebook page quite a lot. It is something that is going to be interesting dramatically. I hope they explore it to see Kirsty's reaction. At least it's already been acknowledged, hasn't it, by Tom when he was having that meltdown with Tony. He said he was terrified of losing another baby, having gone through it with Kirsty. So, yes, there is a lot of dramatic potential there, wouldn't you say, Philippa?
Yeah, I am concerned about Kirsty for a number of reasons. Yes, hearing about Natasha being pregnant, you know, even if her relationship with Tom is over, it's going to be a strange time for Kirsty. And then when I heard Tracy telling Kirsty that Blake had been round and how well he seemed to be doing, you know, you could hear in Kirsty's voice how, yeah, obviously pleased for Blake, but disappointed that she hadn't seen him, that he hadn't chosen to come and see her. And it just sort of perhaps adds to the guilt that she was feeling about that. And so I'm just concerned about what Kirsty sees as her role going forward. You know, who is she aligned to? Who is her tribe there? It was good to hear her being a bit feisty with Linda, making her spill the beans to Ruth, even though that didn't end up very well. Mm. But I agree, Caroline. Kirsty is someone we're going to worry about a little bit. But a brilliant first-time caller in her. And yes, as Quentin says, you must ring in again. That was wonderful.
Yes, please. It was good also to hear her say that she changed her mind about seeing Philip in prison. She said, well, just let him rot.
Yes.
And as you said, she stood up to Linda as well. So, you know, the steel is returning to her spine, we hope.
Yes. For how long, though?
Until the next misfortune falls on her. Yes, yes.
But now we must go to Meg, Wendy and Alan. Meg and Wendy are back and they've multiplied with another person and another prediction.
Hello, everyone. It's Meg and Wendy again calling in. And also Alan, my dad.
Hi, I'm getting into the Arches, believe it or not.
We've recruited him. Excellent. So we were kind of like, we were all a bit surprised our prediction came true with like the shit. I mean, obviously not like the shooting of Mia, but which is good. but yeah, so leading on from that, you have sort of a prediction related to that now, ma'am, don't you?
Well, yes, before listening to it tonight and seeing it start to unfold, we were thinking that Will and Stella were going to get together and we can see it starting to happen.
The blossoming romance.
The blossoming and with the approval of Mia.
Yeah. I feel like she could be instrumental in this.
Yes.
So there we go. Also, Natasha and Tom moving in with Tony and Pat.
Oh.
We're not so sure how that's going to go.
It's going to be disastrous.
You described it as hell on earth for everyone involved, ma'am, didn't you?
So I did. I think so.
We'll see how that unfolds. Also, like, as we're getting nearer to Christmas, we're wondering if there's going to be some, like, massive drama. You know, we had Kirsty and Philip and all of that unfolding last time. We're thinking maybe will we get a Victoria reveal?
Yes. And with Hazel Woolley being on the scene, we did wonder if she had some skeletons in the cupboard.
Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But thank you so much for being so welcoming to us with our first call in. We loved listening to it and we just love listening to the podcast anyway.
We do.
Thank you guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes. Thank you so much for calling back.
We should call her Mystic Meg, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
With all our predictions.
And to now hear Alan coming along as well, joining in.
Poor sod.
Great.
resist, Alan. Seriously.
No, never. So, yes, welcome back, Meg and Wendy. Welcome to Alan. We look forward to hearing more calls from all of you. And, you know, when I was listening to The Archers in the Week and I heard Mia at the shoot, I immediately thought, oh, Meg and Wendy were right. So you're now our prediction people. So I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to these other predictions of yours. Thank you so much, by the way, for the lovely comments about the podcast. It does mean so much to have that feedback. Thank you. And yes, what will the Christmas drama be? There's not much time left now. That's a problem. And usually we hear the Archers on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. We're not going to get that. And that's the problem. We do have, though, the lovely script writer, Kerry Davis, writing the week that will take us into Christmas. So if anyone can pull something out of the bag, he will. But I'm just concerned that we don't have those cliffhanger episodes like Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve where something could really explode that we'd love to listen to. But yes, I agree. Natasha and Tom living with Pat and Tony, hell on earth for everyone involved. Do you agree, Quentin?
Oh, God. Oh, I was pleading with them to say, wait, we'll get back to you. But they're just pushovers, aren't they? Absolute pushovers.
They were so hungry. That's why they were just hangry. Just agreed to anything because they hadn't got any food.
Of course, we all thought perhaps it was all going to be around Hazel, the big Christmas drama, but she's away for a few weeks now, isn't she?
But is she? Because now if they've moved out of the flat, she could theoretically come back.
Well, I meant to mention this tweet last week. It came from a chap called Andrew at Pemby Writes, and this is his prediction for Boxing Day 2021. He says, imagine Boxing Day 2021. Hazel walks into the ball to evict Kenton and co. Blake comes into the ball and simply says, Mum, fade to Barwick Green. Oh.
That's a very different approach, yes.
Hazel is Blake's mother.
Yes. That's
Well, you never know.
Yeah, that's rendered me speechless. So there we go. That doesn't clearly happen often. So let's celebrate that moment.
But it's either we're either going to possibly we could have a Victoria reveal. I mean, is this woman ever going to be hunted down, or we finally get to meet the girls? Who are the guests?
No. Right. Neither, I don't think. Looking at the cast list for next week, it's
okay. No gills. They reckon Will and Stella are going to get together. Well, as you've heard in the review, I have my doubts. So, and others have their doubts. So, I think there's going to be a twist to Stella's romance.
Yes, they did call in earlier in the week, so maybe they will revise their opinion. But we love calls early on in the week because it gives us a bit of time, so thank you very much
to prepare.
Yes, exactly. But I just don't know. Well, there's a lot to talk about Will and Stella this week, I feel, so I don't want to overdo it in this call. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. It's great to have you both back and with Alan on. My question is, though, So Alan has not listened to The Archers before, but now he's into it. So hopefully he's listening to Dum Dee Dum as well.
He sounded such a happy man. It distresses me to think that he's going to ruin all that by becoming an Archers addict. But he's welcome to listen to the podcast. Welcome aboard, Alan. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for that wonderful call. And now we go to Richard. And Richard has some serious views on Hazel and a poem.
Hello, everybody. Richard Beveridge here, Biffo Prop on the Twitters. I hope you're all well. I wanted to make a couple of observations following the most recent podcast. Tom is indeed the most boring man in the universe. He's also second cousin to Pip, who's the most boring woman. Perhaps a case for selective Archer's gene editing. I don't know. And then Hazel. Hazel, Hazel, Hazel. I think she's skint. I think she's burnt through all her money. I think she's trying to get away from creditors. I think she may have had her property elsewhere repossessed. Certainly the behaviour of paying for things with credit cards rather than with cash would indicate a cash flow problem. I think Hazel sees Ambridge as a bolt hole, or as some people pronounce it, a cash point. Some listeners will recall that Peggy had paid her off in 2005, giving her a check large enough to make her go away. And this was followed after Jack Woolley died, with accusations of his solicitor mismanaging the estate, to which the solicitor replied, "I thought you would leave here very happy as a very rich woman." I think Hazel's back from necessity. I think Ambridge is a place of safety. I think she's hoping for title for some of the rewilding investment, or the land. Either way, I suspect there are bumpy times ahead for the former Slitheen Miss Woolley. Time, as always, will tell. A happy remainder of Advent to you all, and a happy and holy Christmas when it arrives, especially to Philippa's dad. And I thought I'd finish with a short seasonal rhyme. 'Twas the night before Christmas, now let me be blunt. Nothing moved in the shop flat, except Hazel, the...
Ooh, thank goodness there's a 2-minute cutoff. Of course.
Yes. I didn't know Hazel was a hunt or a punt, maybe, but I think that's what it was. Yeah, she's taking a punt on coming back to Amherst.
I'm sure you're right there, Philippa. Yes. You're the purest of minds, I know. Thank you for your call, Richard, who's also at Biffo Prop, isn't he, on Twitter. And of course, yeah, Tom is the most boring man in the universe, related, as you say, to Pip. We don't need to say anything. Is he more boring than Adam, is he?
Yes, because Adam, I don't know. Adam is a different type of boring to Tom. Tom's just beige, whereas Adam is, I don't know,
he has
dark
shades.
Navy.
He does have shades, Adam.
Yes, occasional.
Occasional shades. And he's really unnervingly happy at the moment as well. I hope that doesn't last too long. Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is, actually. For me, Adam is funny boring with all this, I haven't got time to eat 2 pieces of bacon and all that nonsense.
And I can't drive 10 miles. Yeah. That's what,
The commute, you know. Whereas Tom is,
He's just, you know, on one of those, his graph never goes up and down, is it? It's just monotonally boring, isn't it? He is just... Mr. Consistent Boring. And he was, I mean, Tony effectively gave him a verbal slap, whereas Jenny actually slapped Alice. Tony had to give him a verbal slap, didn't he? Just to calm the idiot down. I mean, goodness sake.
Yeah, well, we have got a call about that coming on, but I mean, I agree with Richard. Tom is being very boring, and I agree. I think Hazel's got money problems as well.
Yes.
And thank you for the lovely message from my father, Richard. You're very kind. I just love Tom. You know, is this a pregnancy test? No, Tom. No, it's a lateral flow test. What on earth do you think it is? You silly fool. and I'm also concerned about Natasha. I don't think Natasha knows anything about this emergency furniture moving. So I think she's going to arrive back in Ambridge, go off to the flat, keys in the door, open it, and Hazel will be there with a Radio Times and a box of Quality Streets.
Yeah, so Tom's rapid and ridiculous packing at speed caused consternation on social media as well. Lots of people are saying Natasha will go nuts because of his packing or lack of it, won't she? She'll say, "Where's this? Where's I can't find it." We've got months of where did you pack this? Can you imagine? Natasha.
And I was very troubled with the table. Tom was like pulling, "Oh, this table won't go through the door." You've got a table that you're putting into a bedroom. I mean, how massive is this bedroom? Is it the size of an entire house? Otherwise, why would you? Yeah. I'm very concerned about this table.
But why are they having to squeeze into his boy bedroom? I mean, Helen and the kids have left. There's loads of room there. Why do they have to be confined to one bedroom?
Well, yes. And as you say, as for Pat and Tony just allowing it all, you know, they were sitting back, going to have a nice bit of time before Natasha and Tom moved in. And oh, no, there he is. So on a softer moment, I can understand that Tom was very overwrought and the only way of trying to fix things, a bit sort of OCD, trying to cope with it, was just to move the furniture. But it wasn't going to work. And as I say, that table, why?
It's funny what you get obsessed about, Philippa. Yeah.
Tables.
I mean, there are bigger things in life than tables, but you know, if that upsets you, I respect that. Can I also say thanks to Richard for a bit of a history lesson? I'd forgotten about that great big fat check that Peggy had given Hazel back in 2005. Because we have all sort of forgotten. We're all aware that she went away with a lot of money, but perhaps we forgot the details. So thanks for that, Richard, as well.
And Richard keeps saying, I'm going to call in. And so it's nice,
Richard,
to hear you. More calls, please.
And more rude rhymes. Yeah, we're all for those.
We must go on, thank you, Richard, to Bill from Kiev, who has a prediction, a question, and an observation.
Hello, this is Bill Brown. Bill in Ukraine. Hello from Kiev to Philippa, Quentin, and Dumpty Dummers. Character transplants. It's a common complaint. What's going on? The question leads me to theology. What is the theology of the archers? Within the world of Ambridge, it is monotheism, love your neighbor, good morals, etc. But that's a lie. Actually, the archers has something like Greek polytheism, several gods messing around with mortals for entertainment purposes, the gods being scriptwriters. The Greek gods poked here and threw obstacles there just to see what would happen. And this is the important part. They took on guises to interact with the mortals. They walked among us, inhabited characters, did something strange, then left the mortals to deal with the results. Sound familiar? Getting someone pregnant was a favorite, as was disguising themselves as animals, amorous swans, now perhaps sick donkeys. Ferrets, cows peeing down your leg, all are suspect. So don't think character transplant, think inhabited by gods and see who gets pregnant. Well, it's just a thought. On another topic, Philippa once commented that if Pat were a soup, she'd be consommé. What kind of soup is Hazel or Linda? I have a prediction that Tom and Natasha's child will be named Kefir and turn out to be lactose intolerant. That's all for now. Дякую і до побачення, Домти Домніки, which means in Ukrainian, thank you and goodbye, Domti Dummers.
Thank you, Bill. That was a very interesting call. Lots to cover there, from character transplants to telling us what his sort of sign-off means, translating it for us. Very grateful for that.
Yes, but I'm pleased to hear that one, yeah.
Yes. Love the comment about their child being called Kefir and being lactose intolerant. That's amazing. But I've got to come onto the subject of soup, because Bill has set me a challenge here. He's said, you know, what if Pat, I said Pat was a consomme, so what kind of soup would Hazel be and Linda? Okay. Not that I've given any thought to this, I have. But for me, right, Linda has to be a French onion soup. So it pretends to be really grand, but once you've eaten the floating bits of bread and cheese, it's just brown soup. That's what I think Linda is. And Hazel, I would say, is going to my Jamaican connections, chicken foot soup. So they call it chicken soup. I remember going and meeting my sister-in-law for the first time and having some chicken soup and putting my spoon in and coming up. And there is the foot of a chicken, including the claws in that. So from the top, it looks like a normal chicken soup, but underneath it is a whole nother ball game. And that for me is Hazel.
Right. She certainly has claws, doesn't she, Hazel?
Yes.
That's a good analogy. I was going to go for vegetable broth, lots in there. Got to pick our way through, probably leave you with bits in your teeth, that sort of thing. But we'll go for your chicken claw, I think.
What about Linda then? What soup for Linda?
I haven't thought. I'm not good on food, you know that.
Or just say how brilliant my French onion soup idea was then.
I think you're...
All right.
I hope we're going to keep this bit in. I think your suggestion of onion soup was perfect, because you know it promises much.
Yes, all right.
Essentially, I can't improve on that. So yes,
thanks.
And we also had polytheism as well. Blimey, this is a deep call from Bill. Saying that there are several gods messing around with the characters. It's the gods, the scriptwriters are the gods, and they're messing around with the characters. Yeah. What does it make Jeremy Howe then, the editor? top god,
Zeus.
I suppose. Zeus, yes. Yes. I like that idea, because they can just do what they like, can't they? And when we have interviewed and spoken to the actors, they don't really know what's ahead of them, do they?
So that's true. Yeah.
Polytheism is, I think, like your onion soup analogy, Philippa. I think polytheism sums up the way the scriptwriters deal with characters in Ambridge. A nice one, Bill. And thank you for your good wishes. And thank you for the translation. It wasn't rude after all, was it?
It wasn't. Thanks, Bill, very much for your call. We'll have some more of your calls in a moment. But if you're listening to this thinking, I'd like to record a message and I'm wondering how to do it, here's how.
We say this every week, Philippa, and I'm going to mention the P word, and it's not Philippa, it's people. It takes people to make this what we like to call the People's Podcast. So do feel free to populate Dumpty Dum. Now, one of the ways is to use a thing called SpeakPipe for you to record a message or a plot prediction. And we're delighted to say we've made it even simpler for you to use, because we've set up a brand new link which takes you straight to it. So to use SpeakPipe, go to speakpipe.com/dumptydum. That's speakpipe.com/dumptydum. It's ever so easy to use, and you can have as many goes as you like. Nobody's going to know, so don't worry. Another way you can record a message is to send a WhatsApp voice note to 07957-167-696. Remember, if you're calling from outside the UK, to add a +44, and please keep it to a maximum of 2 minutes, which worked a treat now, just now with Richard, didn't it? And really, the easiest way to find out how to get in touch with this is have a look at our pinned tweet on the Dumpty Dum account, because all the details of how to leave us a message can be found there with the links as well.
Now, we've already talked about Patreon, so I won't go on about it too much, but we do need to welcome Sian Fisher. Thank you very much, Sian, for joining the Patreons.
Yep.
And as I said, the Christmas special for those who are supporting us with $2 an episode has been uploaded today. I can only apologise for how awful and scary that video is, but never mind.
There was a moment, dear listener, when I had to prove that I was eating the pickled egg. I'll leave it at that.
Yes, let's.
Not my finest moment, but you know, my pride was at stake.
You certainly proved your point.
I did.
Let's say that. But yes, we won't reveal anymore. I did put one picture on the Facebook group. But yes, go on to Patreon and you can see that full 20-minute video. But anyway, we need to get back to our wonderful calls. And next we have Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, with concerns about Tom.
Greetings, Quentin and Philippa. Jen here, Ambridge Pony Club. I have to say I'm absolutely gobsmacked after last night's episode, which is where Tony so sensitively found out what was troubling his youngest and only surviving son. I mean, wow. Imagine if the situation had been reversed. Imagine if this was Helen who was dealing with a pregnancy, having lost a child. They would all be rushing round, being terribly careful about her feelings. She wouldn't have to be explaining herself. She'd be behaving appallingly and everyone would be terribly understanding about it. And there's poor old Sausage Boy completely losing the plot because he's terrified, understandably terrified. And Mum and Dad are just annoyed with him. And then when Tony figures it out, he actually calls him a lunatic and then decides to add a massive wadge of survivor guilt onto Tom. So never mind his grief, never mind the loss of his son, never mind giving him some time to talk and express his feelings. Nope, it's straight in with, well, you've got to get on with it because we owe it to John. Unbelievable. I mean, it does show just how badly traumatised that family is and how little that they have healed from the loss of John, which is perhaps understandable. But my goodness, do Pat and Tony need to really start appreciating the son they've got. I don't like Tom generally, but in fairness, he was there every step of the way for Helen in the trial. He actually moved out to make room for her children in the family home. He's always there to do all the work on the farm. So however annoying he is, he's really done a lot for that family. And my goodness, does he need some support now?
Wow, Jen, you had a lot to say there. And welcome back, Jen, because I know you've been under the weather recently. So good to hear you back. Hmm. On our airwaves. I fundamentally disagree with you, Jen. I thought, actually, Tony handled Tom really well, I think. I don't think he was insensitive. I think he was sensitive. In fact, I found it quite a touching scene. And I think, you know, you've got the chronology slightly out because he called him, calm down, you're acting like a lunatic, before Tom revealed what was troubling him. And then he calmed him down and said, I think this pregnancy is going to be fine. You're going to be good parents and so forth. And it was actually Tom who brought up the issue of John, because he clearly desperately misses him and feels guilty that John never got to live beyond 22 and got to meet and bring up his own son. And I didn't think it was a great sort of dollop of guilt that he put on it. He was sharing the fact that he, as a father, was missing his son like Tom was missing his brother. So I thought he calmed him down, he listened to him, he was sensitive and reassured him. So no, I don't agree at all.
Oh, now I disagree with you, Quentin. I'm on Jen's side. Okay, maybe I didn't listen to it as closely as you have. And I feel like I need to pause and listen to it again so I can argue my case even more strongly. But my recollection is that when they were talking about it, Tony's advice to Tom was, you have to carry on because John couldn't carry on. And then it went into that discussion. So I'm with Jen that the survivor guilt was thrown onto Tom. And yes, we showed that Tony realised something was up and got that information out of Tom, but I did feel it wasn't a case of, you know, you don't worry about what happened with John, just, you know, live your life and you're going to be a great dad. It wasn't a positive experience. It was a very, I did feel that people have written into the Archers and said, what's this John? Who is John that you sometimes mention? We have no idea what you're talking about. So within one scene, they tried to encapsulate everything that happened with that awful time when John died. So the whole listener loveliness to the Archers is up to date on what happened many years ago. But I'm on Jen's side. Sorry, Quentin. Boo.
Well, you got the chronology all wrong because I write copious notes. Tony, in a very sort of sensitive way and in a paternal way, says, well, good, we've got something we can actually work with. Those are his exact words. He says, let's have a drink, let's have a beer, and let's talk about it. And then he says, it's going to be okay. I've got a good feeling about this baby, but you've got to calm down a bit, Tom. Now, I think that is sensitively handled by Tony.
I've
always liked Tony. He may be dull, but he's always there. He's solid as a rock and he's a good listener.
Team Tony. Well, after this, I'm going to go and listen again, despite listening to it three times, because clearly if I've put it in the wrong order, then I hold my hands up. But at this point, I'm taking Jen's side. Jen, and then I'm on
I would
side.
Like an apology then written in blood. Thank you very much.
In pickled egg juice, maybe. Oh dear. So yes, have you watched Parks and Recreation? Is this something you binge watch, Quentin?
No, it's not. It's apparently the showrunner was the same person who put together The Office in America, which was the US equivalent of The Office, which is a great show. And it's set in a local government office, I think, is all I know, but people rave about it. It's meant to be very good.
You have been doing your research. Yeah, it is funny, but the fact that Tom
watched
the first episode. I've watched some of it, yes. I think it's not the funniest thing I've ever watched, but I certainly found it funnier than Tom. And as a point of principle, I will find it funny and I will binge watch it, because if I have to choose between Tom and Tony, it's going to have to be Tony.
You see, Tony's got good taste in telly.
But let's check that order. Anyway, Jen, thank you very much for your call. Sorry to cause some controversy. Well,
she's a vet. She's put a cat amongst the pigeons.
Oh, very, very good. But now we must go on to Rob, who has thoughts about Will and Stella, as well as Ruth and Stella.
Hello there, Quentin, Philippa, and Dumpty Dummers all around the world. Well, there seems to be romance blowing in the air around Ambridge. And the flames of love are being fanned by the Greta Thunberg of Borsetshire, Mia Grundy. Despite being mercilessly swayed from her beliefs by her stepfather and Stella, she seems to be taking it upon herself to fan the flames of romance between the two of them. Now, I'm the last person to pontificate on flirting, as I have never had a clue about things like that. Once, at an end-of-term party, another teacher put on Come and Get It by Badfinger and dragged me up to dance. Such subtlety just passed me by. But is this all in vain? Even I think that Mia may be barking up the wrong tree. Will says it's too soon to be moving on nearly 4 years after the death of Nick. Admittedly, it was 7 years before I remarried, but I did have some ill-judged and ill-advised relationships in between, so he may be onto something. However, as far as I can see, though, the problem isn't with Will, but with Stella. Every time I've heard her talking to Ruth, I'm sure I've detected a spark. Stella seems definitely smitten, and let's face it, what excitement does Ruth have to look forward to back in the Brookfield bedroom? Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rob. Very, very funny. Yeah, so Ruth and David are celebrating 33 years married. Pat and Tony celebrating 47 years married. I mean, is love in the air for Stella, and with who? I mean, I didn't know that Will was still doing the Bridge Fresh deliveries because we heard him do the delivery to Stella. But we do know that he knows his pak choy from his Mizuna, which was something I wasn't aware of. But when he told her to put the sausages in the fridge, I was like, really? You actually need to mansplain the fact that sausages have to go in the fridge? Oh, yeah, it lost me at that point, I'm afraid, Quentin.
That's his small talk.
Yes. Why do you have to tell someone to put the sausages in the fridge?
That's Will's flirting, that is.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Here's this raw meat. Just leave it out and let the bacteria get it. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Tell us. Well, knows what she's doing.
I mean, Rob's picked up on what I felt as well during the week and many others, that I think Stella's eye is elsewhere. And I think for some bizarre reason, it's looking towards Ruth. Mm. I mean, Ruth has strayed in the past, not in that direction.
No.
So are we going to see a different side to Ruth? That'll be interesting. Struth.
Struth.
I'm with Rob on this. I definitely got the vibes. I mean, as I said in the review, why would she flog over to Brookfield to discuss her concerns about being an extra? I mean, she could pick up the phone. I think that's going to develop along those lines.
Well, Rob, that was a brilliant call, as always. Keep them coming. And now we go from one super call to another. We've got Rosie Porty. She has a question about podcast crossovers and Stella's intentions.
Hi, everybody in Dumpty Dum Land. It's Rosie Porty here calling in on a beautiful, crisp, wintry day. It's been a wonderful week in the Archers, especially the most unlikely crossover ever between the Archers and the My Dad Wrote a Porno podcast. Tony the Travelling Salesman selling pots and pans. The mind is truly boggled at the gender swap from Belinda Blinked to Tony Titillated. Fabulous. I really liked Stella's interactions with Mia. She sort of really saved the day by being empathic and listening to Mia. And she was really impressive. But what I found very weird was the just barging into Brookfield's office and just starting talking to Ruth without Ruth sort of saying, haven't you heard of a doorbell? What are you doing? I also thought it was very odd that Ruth was just happy to share all of her confidential paperwork with a relative stranger. And I'm a bit concerned that, you know, we don't really know whether Stella is an undercover spy for Justin and exactly what her deal is. Why has she come to Ambridge? Like, what is her relationship with Justin? What's going to go on there? But I did enjoy the scene in The Bull with Ruth with her half a shandy and Stella with her pint of Guinness. And maybe we're going to see, I don't know, like a middle-aged change of direction for Ruth's romantic endeavours. Very Sex in the City, but who knows? Sending love to everybody in Dumpty Dum Land, especially those of you who are having a quieter Christmas and New Year than planned. And for anybody who's lost a loved one over the past couple of years through COVID, sending love to you all. And please take care, everybody.
Oh, and this, I think she ran out of time there. She had so much to say. and the same to you, Rosie. Best wishes and happy Christmas, and look after yourself. Lovely to hear from you again. Lots of being Rosie, lots of current cultural references. I mean, we already had Parks and Recreation. She bungs in a Sex and the City reference there, and also this crossover with My Dad Wrote a Porno, which obviously, you know, we're so hip, you and me, Philippa, that we know that reference. I bet you do. Do you know the reference?
Of course I do. It wasn't just Belinda blinked. We all blinked when we heard Pots and Pans immediately. Yeah.
To be fair, I don't listen to the podcast, that podcast, so I didn't know the reference. So bless her, Rosie, did send me a little message afterwards.
Explaining. Bless her.
So why don't you explain the crossover? Because you're so up with the kids.
It's just, it's only for the grown-ups. It's very humorous. It's a chap who, there's lots of series, but basically a chap, his father, wrote and self-published a porno book. And
have you reviewed it on your other podcast?
No. But this chap and his two friends read it and comment on the awfulness, let's say it, of the book, the writing, the use of words. It's awful, but hilariously funny, but definitely not one for the children.
But the lead character in the book is called Belinda Blinked, and she sells pots and pans, right?
Well, she's not called Belinda Blinked. Often she blinks. When something happens, Belinda blinks.
Right.
Or Belinda blinked. So that's what I'm saying. We all blinked. But she starts work for a kitchen firm, kitchen suppliers, that among other things supply pots and pans.
There's your crossover. Okay. Thank you, Rosie, for that. She's also concerned, impressed and intrigued by Stella. She handled Mia really well, didn't she? She did. She really took time to listen. In fact, touchingly, Mia said that Stella reminded her in some ways of her mum, didn't she? Which was sweet, the way she listened. So she was very empathetic and won her round. Yeah, the barging into Ruth's office and just help me go through my confidential paperwork. I mean, that's odd. It was a bit odd, wasn't it?
It was odd. And what also was odd was Ruth saying she didn't understand David's filing system. I find if you're looking for something that begins with F, then if you look in the section after E and before G, Ruth, you might actually find what you're looking for. I mean, call me crazy.
I always got the impression that Ruth did the paperwork as well. Am I under a...
Well, no, because this
there?
Is David's yeah. filing system, mm. she said. Mm. But, yeah, that was very, very strange.
And Rosie's on the same wavelength as me and Rob. She thinks that Stella's interested in Ruth. Mm. So it's not just me, you see, not just me and Rob.
Did you spot the Montbelliards part in the script this week? That's a question for you.
Blimey. There was a reference, wasn't there?
Well,
no, I can't. There was a reference, yeah.
Pat and Tony were discussing the play and whether someone might not be able to do it, you know, for example, maybe a broken leg. And Tony said, oh, you never know, it might happen. And the Montbelliard mood in agreement. So I think the Montbelliards have plotted to kick somebody to break the leg. They had a script moment there.
Okay, right. Okay. Are you taking your medication?
No,
not
today. Well, thank you, Rosie. And now we go to Stephen, who is wondering about love in Ambridge.
Hello, you two. I think that somebody in the Archers team has been reading the Richard Curtis playbook and is using what they have learned for the Stella and Will storyline. All the writing guides say that there are 7 key elements to a rom-com, although they don't always agree what those 7 elements are, but the first few are always the same. Step 1 is to start with 2 characters who both have something missing from their lives. We don't know enough about Stella really to know what she is missing, but if Ruth is her only friend in the village, she probably isn't living her best life quite yet. Will definitely has things missing from his life. There's Nick, obviously. But there's also his job as a gamekeeper, which is what allowed him to escape from his family's perennial cycle of failure. So he is ripe to play the role of the initially misanthropic male lead in a rom-com. Step 2 is the so-called meet-cute, where the two protagonists are thrown together by some strange circumstances. And that's what we heard on Monday, with Mia staging her protest at the shoot, and with Stella coming to the rescue, meeting Will for the first time, and solving a big problem for him. Step 3 is when the two leads become friends and get to know each other, despite obstacles being thrown in their path. It looks like Mia is going to play a role here, probably both in bringing them together over common interests, and complicating things by trying too hard to push them together. Well, you get the general idea. We'll be building up to the big crisis, probably some huge misunderstanding, followed by Will running from Grange Farm to wherever Stella is about to take a big step to declare his love for her, followed by a happy ever after. It's going to take a while, I'm sure, but I reckon that next Christmas, next year's Christmas, that is, when things are all going to be so much better, Will and Stella will be spending the day together, probably watching Alien. So that will be a happy Christmas for them next year. Meanwhile, I'd like to wish both of you and all Dumpty Dummers everywhere a great Christmas this year and a happy New Year.
Oh, Stephen, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you too. Oh, love everywhere in the Archers. We've already said about the wedding anniversaries. We've got Natasha and Tom celebrating the pregnancy. Will and Stella, will they, won't they? Oh, I want Stella to be gay or bi. And I really did think she was. As some people have said, what about with Ruth? I love the story, though, that Stephen's told, and the way there's sort of the build-up and the big issue and can they overcome it, and how that would be nice. But I just don't know. I'm speechless again. Quentin, help me. Help me.
Well, if not Ruth, who else do you think she might fancy?
Well, first of all, does she have to? It'd be nice for someone to come in that isn't forced into a relationship with someone. I don't think it's with Ruth, because we have heard Ruth's friendship with Usha before. They were sort of confidants and friends, and it felt like Stella was the new Usha, the new replacement for that.
But if Stella had a gay relationship, who might it be with? Hannah. How about Hannah?
Actually, that would be good. I was just going to say Mia, but I just don't think.
Bloody hell.
I would stir things up a bit too much. I don't know. Could Debbie come back and have decided that gay is the way, and she could have a relationship with Stella? Stella needs someone decent and strong, Ruth and not Will.
You can't see it with Ruth.
Well, bring it on. Wonderful. Why not? Absolutely, why not?
That would be a twist. I mean, can you imagine David's reaction? That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. That would be like a scene from Alien.
But thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. That was brilliant. And now we go to Sarah, who has thoughts on Tom.
Hi, it's Sarah from Smethwick here. Well, what a week. First, Tom decides to launch himself at the mercy of Pat and Tony without much leeway for them to say, no, you're a big boy now, find your own digs. No pressure there. Oh, and like the way he accidentally on purpose spilled the information that his missus is also with child for extra playing the violin factor. In reality, they'd be wanting to draw up a homeless prevention plan with someone from Borsetshire Council. But I'm treading on Claire Asprey's expertise there. Next up, we have the sassy Stella, who managed to talk down Mia. A textbook example of negotiation on Stella's part, playing up to Mia's concerns, weaknesses, but in a way that made her consider her to be the ideal stepmom material. Wily skills. And Stella is also suddenly the new best friend for Ruth. Not that I'm aware of any other usurped pals regarding the cows being ill-treated. Now, true, recently Linda wondered if they were cold out in the winter. Now, I'm a bit of a townie, but would consider that that's a natural place for a herd. But as by her own confession, a snide complaint to another party isn't Linda's style. She'd just rock up and confront. So who else could have raised the issue? Surely somebody we know as a listener and hence would know the ways of the countryside. The only candidate who possibly springs to mind is Joy, who of course made her first presence known at a parish council meeting complaining that the roads were muddy. Well, what does she expect from the countryside? Anyway, hopefully we'll learn in the fullness of time. So with that, Merry Christmas, one and all, in Dumpty Dum Land. Catch up with you all next year, and ta-ra-ra bit.
Ta-ra-ra bit, Sarah from Smethwick, love. Love to hear from you, and happy Christmas to you as well. I think the animal welfare snitch was Mia, and there were two little klaxons, weren't there? There was one klaxon during the week when Stella was talking to Will, expressing her concerns that Mia might be planning another protest, and suspicions raised about all the questions she asked about getting a dog for her, and she also mentioned animal welfare, and lo and behold, an animal welfare charity is sniffing around Brookfield. So I point the picture, my lord, at Mia.
I disagree. First of all, when Stella was wondering what Mia's next campaign was going to be, Stella didn't realise Mia's next campaign was Stella. So there was that going on. But no, I think it's somebody else. I think it's someone who goes by the name of Rex. He's already last year did the anonymous reviews of the barn, and he's been given notice again. So the last time he did the anonymous reviews was when he was given notice of the farming area. Now he's been given notice of the bungalow. So I think it could be Rex who's going on to spill the beans, because what's he got to lose now?
I like your thinking.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There we go. But yeah.
You could be right. I could be wrong about Mia. I don't think it's Joy. Nah, it's not Joy.
I don't know. But Sarah, you wish, give us your Christmas wishes, which we are very grateful for, and say, see us in the new year. No, there's this. We're not going anywhere. On Boxing Day, Quentin and I will be here recording.
Are we?
Sorry, Quentin. Do you remember those applications we filled in triplicate with our families? Yes, I do. So we will be here recording on Boxing Day. We will be here recording on the 2nd of January as well, the normal days. So keep your calls coming in. Be lovely to hear you during the Christmas time. And we've got some special content for those Christmassy episodes, the one on the 26th of December and the 2nd of January, because there is going to be, well, do we give the game away? I don't know. Well, let's just say we've got a special guest and the words quiz and Christmas are involved. But I don't think we should say any more. Do you, Quentin?
Should we leave it hanging?
Yeah, I think we should tune in to find out.
Tune in. It's ideal Christmas fodder.
Yes.
You know, when you need something to do and to get the old grey matter going. You'll love it.
Yes. Well, we certainly loved it. But wonderful, Sarah. Thank you for that call. And now we go to Brian, who is really fed up with the mysteries.
Hello, it's Brian. Right. Be honest, the main reason I'm ringing is because I wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. But having said that, a couple of things I need to get off my chest. Firstly, the mystery plays, hate that storyline they've done this year. It's even more tedious than usual. Why Eddie would suddenly invite loads of extras in, why they'd agree to that off 2 weeks before Christmas when you can't even get people to be in the plays normally, and then why Linda would not first say they want to sack them and then not sack them here. And then the barn thing, it's just one thing after another. It all seems so contrived, and or even more than usual. So, I've had enough of that. Stella, well, she does deserve a storyline. I'm sure she'll get one. I can't see it being a romance with Will, the most unlikely pairing I could imagine. Stella, I don't think is the sort of person that would be a content to be a housewife like Will would normally expect someone to be. Don't see that working at all. And what was the other thing I was going to say? It was, all the previous warm glow storylines have been highlighted this week because it seems to be everybody's anniversary. And I think it's a few birthdays in there as well. So Ambridge Shop must be the only place that sells more anniversary and birthday cards at Christmas than Christmas cards. But that's it. Have a good one. And I'll speak to you again. Bye.
Brian, that was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? That's really, really good. I love that point about the cards because, yes, there were so many births and marriages in Christmas, particularly, you know, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. So, yes. Mystery plays contrived. I mean, we have this every year when they put on a performance. Some of us get fed up with it. Some of us love it. I imagine it's going to be all this, oh, no, you can't use Brookfield, and then suddenly relenting. But we'll have to see. And yet you do make a good point, Brian. Would Will expect Stella just to be the typical sort of housewife role if they got together? If it was a few years ago, maybe that was the case. Perhaps he's changed now because bringing up the kids on his own, he's had to be more involved, but yeah, they are very different people. So yeah,
it's not going to happen. Philippa, calm down. It's not going to happen. Okay,
calm down.
You feel better now. You feel better now.
Deep breath. It's all fine.
Stop acting like a lunatic. Okay.
Jen, quick, send an email in. I'm being bullied here. It's passive aggression and all sorts of things. I think it's outrageous.
And Brian, I'm happy Christmas to you as well, and happy New Year and all that. I normally just head in hands for about a month when we have the panto or the mysteries or whatever. This year, I decided I've just got to have to bite the bullet and just go with the flow. And I'm sort of, as a result, quite enjoying all this nonsense because it's actually had a bit more edge, hasn't it? So bear with it, Brian. I mean, I tear my hair out as well. I mean, it's all nonsense. It's extremely irritating, but you just got to accept it for about 5 weeks of the year. yeah, lovely call, Brian. Glad you got that off your chest. But just accept it, Brian. It's much easier.
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse, Brian, next week. Yeah. So prepare yourself. Anyway, those are the calls. But you can also send us an email or a text if you prefer. How can Dumpty Dummers do that, Quentin?
Yes, you're very welcome to send a text to this number, 07957 167696. Remember, if you're texting from outside the UK, to add a +44. Or if you'd prefer to send an email, visit the dumptydum.com website and click the Contact Us tab at the top of the page. Please do get your calls, emails and texts in by just before noon on Sunday, as we record at midday UK time. And remember, you need to be 18 or over to submit any views or comments.
Actually, Quentin, now I think about it, aren't we recording the next two episodes at 11 a.m? Wasn't that part of the special permission obtained by your wife that we record at 11, not 12?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the clauses here.
Yeah. Subsection 3.2a.
Yes, that was a stipulation. You're quite right.
So yes, if it's possible to get your calls in by 11 o'clock, that would be wonderful. I mean, I guess we'll keep an eye on SpeakPipe to see what calls come in while we're recording. But yeah.
Talking of my wife, you know she's no fan of the Archers and, you know, raises her eyes to the heavens, really, whenever it comes on the radio. But she does occasionally try to dip her toe in just to see why I spend so much time like you thinking about this wretched docudrama. And she was listening this week with lots of arguing, shouting and so forth, and people getting the huff, and she says actually it should be called Umbridge, because everybody, she thought, got the impression that everybody takes a lot of umbrage in Ambridge. And I thought it was quite good.
That's very clever.
So I praised her. Hoping to get a bit more.
Yeah, could we start at 12 instead of 11? You could tell her to be a caller in her. She'd love that.
God. That'd be funny, wouldn't it? I'd just like to call in. I'd like to complain about my husband. He spends far too long listening to the Archers. I never see him on a Sunday because he seems to be locked away talking into a microphone. Yeah, I could do it for her, really. I'll give her the script.
Anyway, now we need to go from our caller-inerers to our email and text-inerers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And our first email is a belated one. Royfield had some issues with his emails going to spam, so apologies for this, but it's worth waiting for. And this email is from Sarah, and it's about the week in the Archers.
And she says, hi, this is Sarah, emailing in from Oregon, USA. I've been listening to The Archers since about 2012. I thought that this week was pretty good. Hazel is a really horrible person, but causes much-needed drama. I particularly liked that they had Fallon go directly to Natasha to admit that it was she who spilled the beans about Natasha working from home. Although I don't really understand why this was such a big deal in the middle of a global pandemic, as someone who's recovering from COVID, I thought Hazel would be able to understand. I started to say sympathetic, but remembered I was talking about Hazel Woolley. Lol. Yes. Yeah, we are talking about Hazel, Sarah. But I say it's a good point. She banged on, didn't she, so much about, oh, I'm recovering from COVID. Use the fact that Natasha appeared to be working from home or using the flat for her business as a reason to turf them out. So another reason to dislike the woman hugely, but that's what we all enjoy doing. Thanks for mailing in, Sarah.
Yes, thanks, Sarah. I mean, Hazel did say she'd been on a ventilator for a week, but whether we believe that or not, I don't believe it. But yes, glad to hear that you see the evil in Hazel. That's a relief. Thank you very much, Sarah, and apologies for not including that last week. Now we have an email from Vasana, and she's written in about last week's episode of Dum-de-Dum. And she's a first-time email innerer, which is very exciting. So here we go. Dear Dumpty Dum, I love the podcast and been listening for a few years. I don't know my exact Archers vintage, but I do remember the Helen and Rob storyline as being early in my Archers journey. I've always wanted to write in and connect with Dumpty Dum, but have never felt I had enough to say until now. I was deeply moved by Helen's phone call and Quentin and Philippa's discussion of pregnancy loss. This is a topic that is very close to my heart. My pregnancy history is 2 miscarriages, then 1 live birth, a beautiful daughter who I'm so grateful for, and then a 3rd miscarriage. I'm currently pregnant for the 5th time, and I hope the result will be another wonderful child. I would love it if the Archers address the issue of pregnancy after loss. I think a conversation is desperately needed to educate people on the complexity of emotions surrounding pregnancy after loss. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I was heartbroken and frustrated by the utter lack of sensitivity that I encountered. Most people, including family, acted as if my miscarriages had never happened and seemed to expect those heartbreaking losses would not impact my overall experience of pregnancy. There was no acknowledgement or empathy towards the complex emotions that pregnancy raised for me and my husband. Unfortunately, this type of stress doesn't necessarily end with the pregnancy and can also affect postpartum mental health. Now, whenever I speak to women who are pregnant, instead of getting really excited and just saying congratulations, I try to ask them what they're experiencing. I listen to them, and depending on their response, I acknowledge that pregnancy is joyous, amazing, physically challenging, overwhelming, and stressful. It is emotionally complex. I think it's so important and helpful to acknowledge all these aspects of pregnancy, as it helps women who are struggling during pregnancy to feel less alone. It was wonderful to hear this topic discussed on Dumpty Dum. Kind wishes, Vasana. Vasana, that's just lovely to get that feedback. Thank you. And for all the comments on Twitter and Facebook, we just need to keep talking about this. And the more people talk, hopefully, the better things will feel. And you know, you're not on your own. But Vasana, thank you so much for that. And we look forward to your next email in.
I mean, as I said last week, I wasn't expecting to talk about that. And it was good to talk about it because I hadn't thought about it for a long time. And I think what I hadn't realized was that it was, when the subject does come up, it's still quite raw all these years on. So I think we've hopefully all helped each other by talking about it. And I think Vasana, it's a good idea. You know, it's a very nuanced area of drama that could be explored, the issue of pregnancy after loss. And I think the way that you inquire about pregnant women's well-being is a very interesting and, again, a nuanced way of asking. So I've learned a lot from your email as well. So thank you very much indeed, Vasana, for emailing in.
Yeah, thank you. And our third email is from Amelia, who wants to talk to us about Stella.
Hello, Quentin and Philippa. I really love the podcast. I don't want to sound prurient, but it really seemed to me like Stella has amorous intentions towards Ruth. She's way too interested in her, showing up randomly, wanting to go for a drink. Also, when has Ruth ever gone for a drink with a mate? The most she usually manages is coffee and homemade cake in the kitchen with Usha. I also think David would be upset and flummoxed at the idea of Ruth going to the ball without him. It's definitely odd behaviour, but would Stella go for someone who was in a relationship? Do we have reason to think she's sneaky? I mean, she was sneaky about knowing Justin. That's it from me, Amelia. Yeah. Thanks for your lovely comments about the podcast, Amelia, and thanks for emailing in. We have discussed this already at some length, haven't we? I'm with you. I think Stella has an eye for Ruth. When has Ruth got out with a mate? You're right, Usha, but unfortunately Usha's been silent for centuries.
Well, we had her back recently. We did have
Usha for about three words. Yeah,
yes, seconds, but she was there. That's what happens when you're friends with Ruth, you see. You just disappear. Yeah. You don't want to be there.
And we mustn't forget, as Rosie pointed out also, that, you know, Stella could well be a spy for Justin.
Mm. We will have to see. But Amelia, wonderful email. Thank you very much. And now our final email to make Quentin
so happy.
It is. No. And prepare yourself for this. It's from Anon of Ambridge with another question.
Oh, no. I thought we got away with it this week.
Dear Uncle Quentin and Auntie Philippa, I am confused and need your help. I have heard that outfits worn at the time of Jesus were also worn in the 1970s. Is this correct? I wonder if I could make some money from my wardrobe. Thank you, Anon of Ambridge. Anon? No, well, no, it's Pat's insanity. I appreciate it might be a long and flowing outfit, but I'm pretty sure that elasticated blue satin jumpsuits weren't a thing when Jesus was born. There, I've said it. I've got it off my chest.
Good. I mean, he or she is right. There's a lot of money to be made. It's all back in vogue, isn't it? A lot of it. So if you've got some, Anon, and you want to make some money, good thinking there. I think what you need to, I mean, I think this has also betrayed the vintage of Anon of Ambridge as well, because we're gradually building up a profile, aren't we? So by all means, send us a photograph of the clothes in question, because maybe we could help you. Because that way, Philippa, we can see if he's Anon is a man or a woman, right?
And I'm not going to say anything more than this, but I have noticed that Anon of Ambridge spells my name in a particular way that somebody who sends emails to me does. So I'm not going to say anything more than that, but you know who you are, and I'm going to try and catch you out next time. But anyway, thank you for your calls and emails and texts. We value them so much. Keep them coming, please. And now we go to our special bookish item. Now, I was recording the Christmas episode of the book podcast I do, and I had to have back, I had her last year, a wonderful person called Lauren. Now, Quentin, you may not know this, but books are very big on YouTube. They are massive. And people do, it's called BookTube, people review books. And one of the leading lights is someone called Lauren from Lauren and the Books. And she was on my podcast, and she's a fan of The Archers, dum-de-dum. So we had to have her on. Here we go. We've just recorded the Christmas special for my book podcast.
I'm feeling very Christmassy.
me too. But we need to talk about The Archers.
I'm delighted to talk about The Archers. As I've just said, next to Christmas and the books, The Archers features up there with some of my favourite things.
How did you get into The Archers?
Well, it's actually a fellow booktuber who recommended it to me. So Simon Savage from the booktube channel Savage Reads, him and his husband were very, very into The Archers, and we went to stay with them. They talked a lot, and it was just getting to the end of the Rob and Helen story. So they were saying about how they'd had sort of like sleepless nights worrying about Helen and things like that. And I said, oh, I'm going to get into it. So I started listening on the way back from visiting them in Liverpool, in the car. And I've been listening ever since. Now, the funny thing is that I started listening after the Rob and Helen story. So I feel like everything was a bit sort of fluffy, and there wasn't anything too taxing. And the first sort of few months of me listening was about women playing on the cricket team and getting new changing rooms, getting separate changing rooms for them. So that was literally like months of that. And I was still loving it, even though it was very sort of not much plot going on, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just such a comfort to listen to.
Absolutely.
So who's your favourite character?
Well, do you know, I've got a few. I'm very fond of Lily and Freddie. I really, yeah, I know. And I don't think they get much sort of like representation in terms of fans. Yeah. But I think I've been on a bit of a journey with them because I used to think Freddie was a bit of an idiot, but I've really warmed to him in recent years, especially since he's been getting a bit more involved at sort of Lower Loxley, and his relationship with Linda's been lovely to see.
Yeah.
I really like Lily. I don't know what she's doing with Russ, but I really,
exactly, that's the problem.
I really like her. I find her very sensible and sort of, I just think they're a good twosome. And then Lillian is also a favourite of mine.
Yeah.
I'm just very into her and sort of just a non-care of stuff and just having just lived this life. She's lived such a life, hasn't she?
She has. And just the minute you hear her voice, you know. We're in for some fun. Okay, then, who winds you up?
Oh, well, Russ winds me up. his voice really winds me up. And what was I listening to the other day? And I'm sure the actor who plays Russ was doing the voiceover for something as well. Maybe on Radio 4, just sort of like the program announcer. I was like, Russ is everywhere. Who else winds me up? I'm sure when I'm listening to it, I'm like, Kate. I find borderline unbearable, but also I'm fascinated by her sort of audacity, just suggest things and expect things to go away.
And you are a dum-de-dum listener, I believe.
I am indeed, yeah. I try to keep up with it as much as possible. There's so much Archers gear going on, so I'm listening to the Archers, then I'm listening to dum-de-dum and just trying to not be spoiled by listening to dum-de-dum before I listen to the Archers. So, yeah, but it's great to have a sort of companion piece to listen to and be involved for people who enjoy something as much as you do. I've got my boyfriend listening to it as well, so I can chat to him about it too.
Well done. Well, Lauren from Lauren and the Books, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
She's spot on about Kate as well, because I do like Kate, but God, she winds me up as well.
We must go on to our lovely Facebook group where the dum-de-dum community sits there as we sit back for the roundup with our Sandra.
This is Sandra with a social media roundup for the week beginning Sunday the 12th of December. Blake's visit to the horror bins was a hot topic early in the week. Sharon Weldon admitted to being in tears at the visit. Drew Hamilton wasn't the only one who was sad to hear that Blake was leaving. He had hoped that Blake would become a regular. Leslie Greaves would have liked to have seen his character develop, and I think so would I. Guy R. Williams saw a new side to Stella and thought the intervention with Mia at the shoot was very well written. Certainly Martin Gibson wouldn't have been able to handle it that well. The question was asked by a few, did Martin Gibson ever settle his bar bill? Archer's listeners have long memories. Shirley Anstey wondered if there was romance in the air for Will and Stella. Not a lot seemed to agree. Some listeners seem to have forgotten who Stella was and had to ask. Kay Goff said that she had been warming to Linda of late, but thought that her disagreement with Kersey about the extras was totally ridiculous. Kay would have told Linda to wind her neck in and calm down. There was a lot of agreement to that, and Emily Pettingell likened Linda to a toddler stamping her foot. Kate Lyle was surprised at Linda's reaction to Tracy's threat to write to the Queen about her behaviour. After all, Linda isn't that stupid. Tom was being called all shades of an idiot across the Facebook groups for letting the cat out of the bag about Natasha's pregnancy. Listeners also thought his insistence of moving out of the flat while Natasha was away was another huge mistake, and Tom was accused of being insensitive. We all know that he does have a history of insensitivity, and listeners remembered that he jilted Kirsty right at the altar. Natasha did know about Tom's relationship with Kirsty, but listeners wondered if she also knew about the late miscarriage. However, the exchange between Tom and Tony did move a lot of people, especially the reminders about the early demise of John Archer.
who complained about the Brookfield cows? Shirley Farron Anstey suggested that it could be Mia. It was noted by some that this was the second recent incident of someone making accusations with no proof. Listeners certainly didn't believe that it was Linda, as she would have been comfortable in admitting to it. Poor Kirsty. Listeners were wondering why no one had told her earlier that Blake had finally accepted the truth about Philip Moss. Well, that's all for me, and I'll see you in the new year. Don't forget that it's only 120 more sleeps until Christmas. If you're a cat, that is. Bye.
Thank you, Sandra, and to everyone who's posted their thoughts on the Dum-de-Dum Facebook group. What a great community. Do join us there.
We're also on Twitter under @DumptyDum. You'll see our team always include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A. That's so the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets as well. Please, if you can, try and include @DumptyDum in your tweet so it means more people get to see your tweet and it helps our community to grow still further.
As well as @DumptyDum, we're both on Twitter. I can be found at QuickBook Review. How about you, Quentin?
You'll find me @13MinuteMan. That's 13MinuteMan.
And now it's time to crown our Tweeters of the Week.
Yep. In bronze place, we have Helen Walmsley J at The Vintage Year. And she says, I hope Pat didn't junk Tom's Sausage of the Month magazine collection, especially the one with the Cumberland centerfold. Naughty, Helen, naughty. Sarah Mattox has been naughty as well, in silver position @Sarah_Mattox. Could we fashion a loincloth out of the bunting? Clever.
Yeah, very good. A bunting loincloth.
Is there enough, Sarah? Naughty, naughty. Anyway, I can
see. She didn't say that, Quentin. That's you and your filthy mind.
Yeah, that's me, yeah. And I just I can feel you blushing down the line.
Yeah.
She's blushing, folks. God, the heat, the heat, the heat. Anyway, in gold place is Bob Hawkins at Salvatore Rosso. And he has asked this question, which others did as well. The biggest problem with all these extras is there'll be no audience. To which Vanessa Sexton said, I think the population of Pennyhasset have frog-marched into Ambridge and forced to watch usually. And he replied, a cruel and unusual punishment. So for those, Bob Hawkins, you get gold.
Excellent. Very, very good. Well, we need to wind down and give our thanks. We need to thank Stephen again for his wonderful tune, and to Caroline, Meg, Wendy and Alan, Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, Richard, Sarah, Bill, Rosie, Rob, Stephen, Sarah, Brian, Vasana, Amelia, Anon of Ambridge and BookTuber Lauren in the Books for their contributions.
Thanks also to our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Shambridge for her incredible voices, and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
So what will be revealed next week? Will the Queen hot-foot it to Ambridge to launch an investigation into the treatment of actors in the mystery plays? She's got the royal train on standby. Will Natasha and Pat sit together by the fire, happily making crochet animals for the nursery?
Fat chance.
Will Ruth and Linda discover they are each other's secret Santa? That's going to lead to a lovely exchange of gifts round the tree. And will Helen get involved in the move of Tom back to the family home? We thought we'd miss Stir Up Sunday, but Helen could easily squeeze some stirring up before Christmas. All will be revealed next week. But for now, it's a Merry Christmas and a bye-bye from me.
And since I look like something out of Thomas Hardy, I'll wish you all a happy Christmas and bid you adieu as well. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.